Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for attending the 2013 Fundraising Success Virtual Conference and Expo, and thank you especially for sticking it out with us to the very end. I'm Margaret Battistelli-Gardner, Editor-in-Chief of Fundraising Success, and I am so pleased to welcome you to our closing panel discussion, Top Survival and Growth Tactics for Nonprofits in 2014 and Beyond. Joining me as host today is Joe Boland, Fundraising Success's Managing Editor. We really like closing this conference with a lively session, and there's no better way to ensure that than by inviting members of our editorial advisory board to get together and bounce ideas off of each other while they're bouncing off the walls. And this year's no exception, but we've also invited some other friends of FS, all of whom are highly respected in the sector for their knowledge and their no-nonsense approach. But before we get started, Joe has some technical pointers for us.
Thanks, Margaret. First, if you have any technical issues, troubleshoot by clicking on the widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the question and answer box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select questions later on, time permitting, and you can send them anytime. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so you can utilize all the features on the console. Check out the tips for attendees widget if you'd like to learn about the console you're viewing on today. If you're looking to get CFRE credits for attending this session, please pay special attention when Margaret signs off at the end. She'll be going over how to obtain the tracking document then. Finally, if you would like to view this session again later, don't forget that we'll be archiving the entire show today. We'll have the on-demand environment up and running for 3 months beginning on Monday, September 16th. Watch your email for more details on that. And now with the technical stuff out of the way, please welcome our moderator for this closing discussion, Angie Moore, VP of Strategy and Development at 11D Marketing Group. Angie is making a return appearance today after moderating this morning's opening keynote debate. She's still going strong, so we'll leave her to introduce the rest of our panel and kick off the discussion.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Joe and Margaret. I am going to actually spend a little bit of time. I'm going to go backwards just to make sure that we've got everybody can be introduced here. So you'll see their names and their photos up on the slides. I'll let you read that while I tell you that it's just sort of humbling to be on a panel and get to moderate such a great group of people with just enormous experience and, most importantly for today's discussion, enormous ideas on how our nonprofits can grow as we go into 2014. So with that said, I'm assuming by now you've recognized our panel. I'm going to be calling on them by their first name. We've got a collection of both agency and nonprofits on the phone. What I do want to do is tell you that, you know, you all saw the title of the closing session. You know, we sort of gave them a broad set of rules here, you know, which is, hey, what are the things that you believe, you know, organizations should be focusing on to grow. And, you know, hopefully what we're going to do is go through them at a rapid pace so you get as many as possible, but also you're going to feel some tactical elements in here as well. And I think what we've got for you today is everything from, you know, getting new donors to obviously retention, getting more people to do more things, how to grow, how to get more money. So sort of the sky is the limit on this. So what I'm going to do is go ahead and start us off in that upper left-hand corner of getting new donors and really sort of focus on acquisition and what our panelists might have to say about acquisition. Ellen, why don't you kick us off on the concept of getting new donors as we move forward in the years?
Sure. Thanks, Angie. The phrase that pays for the past few years has been retention, and rightly so. Retention needs to continue to be a key metric that we all pay attention to and strive to improve upon. But if we don't have anyone new to retain, then we're not going to thrive. So don't cut acquisition, and if you have cut it recently, then please add it back now. There's three channels that you should be looking to acquire donors. Obviously, direct mail, but you need to mail smarter. Cooperative databases have been around for a long time, and they're gaining popularity every year in the nonprofit sector. They're a great way to find new donors and expand your available universe. So talk to your list broker, find out what co-ops will work best for your organization, and keep on top of all of the new ones that were coming onto the market. You should really be using co-ops in every merge. Good customer matches are also key to making big files work. There's plenty of opportunities to use those, and they should be tested along with zip files. And try new products. We're currently testing something called Link to Me with some of our clients as a way of finding like-minded donors, and I can't say if it's working or not yet because we don't have any results, but I can say there is value to being on top of the newest products that are coming out there. Don't be afraid to try new models, new products, new lists. And, of course, along with the list plan that has you in a variety of markets, you need to be testing. And I'm not talking about tweaks to your creative. I mean test your message, test your package, test seasonality constantly. You should have multiple control packages and multiple list plans to go with those. Number two is online, creating targeted ads that give people a reason to click through. The most important part of that sentence was give people a reason to click through. It doesn't always mean give or donate. It can mean offering them an inexpensive premium or a call to action that requires someone to give you their email and their home address so you can immediately put them into your conversion program, which, of course, you will have ready to go before you run your first ad. And again, test your ad, test their placement, test the call to action, test the landing page. Make sure your image or text is so compelling that when I look at it, I have to see more. And then number three, of course, social media. Your social media strategy should be well thought out and as planned and tested as every other part of your fundraising and communication plan. When you sit down to create a fundraising strategy for a program or a campaign, everyone should ask themselves, what do we want our community and their friends to share, like, tweet, post, pin, retweet, text, check in, forward, dig, Reddit, upload, download, publish, or any other way participate with us on this campaign? The more you engage your donors, the more likely they are to become donors now or one day in the future. And if you have a teenager in your life, pay attention to what social media outlets they abandon because the, quote, old people are using it, that's donors, and what ones they use the most because those old people will soon be migrating there.
Fantastic. Ellen, thank you very much. Boy, that was a lot packed into that time frame. So I'm going to pull out one of the words you used, and you used it several times. You said, hey, look, don't be afraid to try new ideas, new strategies, new lists, new models, et cetera. So, as we look to try to grow and get our constituents, donors, members, volunteers, whatever you might have, to do more and do more with us and give us more money, I wanted to sort of actually say, hey, there's a strategy that's been around for a very long time that's not new, but it just continues to evolve and just do better and better. And that's the concept of sustained giving or monthly giving. Dane, what's your thought on what people should be paying attention to, whether they've got a program or they're thinking about launching a program?
Sure. Thanks, Angie. So for those of you who know me, you know that I'm a big believer in monthly giving. I don't know if it's because I was schooled at Greenpeace and always based our fundraising program on a European model, or if I've just had enough experience to know that it works at this point. But I'd like to throw out there that not only is monthly giving important to growth of an organization, I think in the future it's going to be important to the survival of organizations. Why is that? That's because monthly donors have a higher retention rate and a higher long-term value for the organization. And I've seen how monthly giving can impact overall budgets and growth. At HRC, I started the monthly giving program, which is we call it Partners, in 1997. That first year, we had about 2,000 monthly donors. Today, the organization has 65,000 monthly donors, which represents more than $10 million in our gross income. It's also our highest net income program. And for us, that's more than 10% of our overall donor file, and it represents 25% of our organization budget. The short-term investment that you put into a monthly giving program is absolutely worth the long-term net growth. We bring in monthly donors through face-to-face canvassing, through our direct marketing campaigns, through telemarketing, web, email. We convert people through welcome series and through a variety of other channels. I would encourage people to start experimenting with monthly giving asks in all of their channels. And for organizations that are not advocacy organizations or not C4 organizations where size matters, I would also encourage people to actually experiment with a monthly giving primary ask or a monthly giving only ask approach. because I think the relative impact for some organizations, while you do lose one-time support, that one-time support is often more expensive, and monthly giving would be more beneficial to the organization in the long run.
Hey, Dane, you actually just mentioned something I want to tack on. We've got a person who has asked a question on our board here. Cheryl wants to know, how do you track monthly giving easily for a small nonprofit? And I know you just sort of said, hey, look, if you're in an organization, if you're not a C4 where you know, size is a part of the monthly giving process, can you give Cheryl some tips on if she's a smaller organization? Go ahead.
Go, please.
No, go right ahead. My fault.
I was just going to say that I would probably want to know a little bit more about their tracking mechanisms for their other donor income to see how they might adapt that for monthly giving. But if it's a small and growing program, it can be done relatively easy. I'm sure whatever system that they currently have could be capable of it. If not, you could even set something up in Excel to monitor performance on a regular basis. And
perfect.
If any of my other colleagues have answers, please jump in.
Yeah,
perfect.
Dane, this is Krista McCurry. I would agree with you. The size of your organization should not be an impediment to you creating that program or to you tracking it. While it may limit the channels and the programs that you have access to build it and to add to the base of donors that you have that are sustaining donors, it shouldn't be a barrier to you managing that program and growing the relationship with the donors that are in it.
Perfect. Hey, guys, two quick things. One person has asked, can we get a copy of the transcript? I believe, Margaret, Joe, this is going to be up afterwards for like 90 days or something like that, because I know we're speeding through some topics here, right?
Yeah, it will be up for 90 days, so people can watch it on demand. But I think we will also at some point, either in the newsletter or in the magazine, print an article based on this discussion like we did last
Perfect.
Year.
Perfect. Okay.
Thank you.
I just wanted to answer that. Guys, I've got a couple of other questions rolling in about monthly giving. I'm going to sprinkle one in, and then I'm going to go to the next topic, and then we're going to come back to them. So if you're somebody who submitted a question, don't get worried. I'm going to try to get to yours, or we'll get to it after the meeting with an answer from the panel. Someone wants to know if there is a monthly giving ask that is too small. So I thought we'd go ahead and get that out there.
Angie, this is Kristen. Can I answer that question?
You can more than certainly answer it.
I'll at least start the ball rolling. It really depends on a couple of different factors. If the majority of your monthly donors are going to be giving by credit card, it is still very efficient to take gifts even as small as $5, because you know that those gifts are going to go through about 95% of the time. You have very low costs to manage the relationship. You're not issuing a monthly statement, et cetera. And the likelihood that you're going to get 12 or, in some cases, more gifts out of those people in a year is very high.
Perfect. Thank you. All right, so we're going to change topics right quick, but sort of stay along the lines of keeping donors and keeping people engaged. Jeff, what's your thought on this whole concept of what we should be doing on retaining donors and even outside the donor population, volunteers, other types of constituents?
Absolutely. We've talked about that. The bottom line is to keep them, that we know that retaining donors is less costly. We also know that people give more to where they're involved, that long-time donors are more likely to consider a planned gift or an ultimate gift. So always be looking for the opportunities, not only for donor retention, but to engage your donors as volunteers, as advocates for the organization, no matter what your cause or what your geographic reach would be. How can you get your donors to be advocates, to be involved to with your organization? And, of course, the three basic things. One, and we'll oftentimes do interviews with board members of organizations we're working with, and it's amazing the number of even board members that when you get to dialoguing with them, that they don't really aren't aware always of being asked, they're not always aware of being thanked, and they're not always communicated regularly. So that would be for volunteers and for retaining donors, got to ask regularly, thank regularly, and communicate regularly.
Perfect. Sort of continuing along that line of best practices, and how do we do the things that we've always done, which we know work, but do them the best possible way? You know, Mark, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, as we're looking at it coming into the next year, I think one of the things that we get really sidetracked by is the flashy, shiny object. It's usually a social media thing that's spelled poorly, and, you know, Flickr or something else with missing letters. But for really serious fundraisers, direct mail is still a must. I gave a social media pre-conference for another conference yesterday, and we were going through all the different types of social media, but they kept saying, how do we get gifts online? And I said, well, you send them a letter. So it's if you look at the most recent Fundraising Success magazine, Jeff Brooks' editorial, A Fundraiser or Faker, what we want to do is be able to show flashy new things to our board and our boss, but really successful fundraising is kind of boring. It's executing a plan. It's calling the donors and writing the letter and drafting it and using the best practices. So when it comes to fundraising letters, a couple of the mistakes people make, and it would be great to lose these mistakes as you're writing your year-end appeals if you haven't written them yet. And if you haven't written them yet, why not? You had all summer. But one of the things that you should try to do is get that high school English teacher editor out of your head. You're not trying to get an A on this paper. You're not writing a composition. You're not trying to submit it for a Pulitzer Prize. Your only goal in fundraising letters through mail is to raise funds. So it's not to educate people on the intricacies of your cause. It's not to do all these other things, which are good communication tools. But if you're writing a fundraising letter, it's a lot less confusing to a donor if you just keep it to raising funds. Use a lot of white space, big fonts. And I did a quick Google search on effective fundraising letters and fundraising letters and saw a lot of us have posts on tips on how to do good fundraising letters. So if you just Googled effective fundraising letters or Googled fundraising letters, you'll see a lot of good templates and a lot of good tips on the font styles and how to write it so donors can skim it, because all of us are reading these things over trash cans, whether we're in the industry or not. And we need to get past the trash can and into the donor's wallet.
Mark, this is Kristen. If I can just embroider on top of what you're saying here, you mentioned Jeff Brooks and his recent editorial. I have also used the very brief little pocket guide that he published about a year ago on effective fundraising letters to educate those stakeholders within organizations that wanted to be grammar teachers, wanted to be English teachers, to get them used to the idea that good fundraising letters aren't always term papers.
At all.
So
nope.
It can be a handy thing to keep in your back pocket.
Is that the book that he wrote, or did he write a little pocket guide too?
It is a book. It's a paperback. It's about 90 pages,
book.
Easy
yeah,
to read.
I love that
yeah,
book.
It's a great book.
Fantastic. Ellen, I know you've probably got some thoughts on this topic. Well, what are your thoughts on, you know, how you keep donors involved and do our best on fundraising?
Yes. I'm going to start off with a little appeal here. Dear friend, won't you please give HPC, HPC 1.5, or HPC 2? Dear organization X, why should I? What did you do with my HPC? What will HPC 1.5 get me? How much better will I feel if I give you HPC 2? When will you fix the problem you want me to help with? How will I make a difference? Where is my money going? Oh, and by the way, I got 5 letters, 3 emails, 2 texts, and 5 tweets today. Why should I give to you instead of those other groups I just heard from? Well, making the case to give more, to be connected, to care, to trust, to share our passion, to feel joy, to be fulfilled, to have an experience, to give. Why should a donor make a gift to your organization? And really more specifically, why should they make a larger gift than they did the last time? Because we know we need to upgrade. So I would suggest that everyone grab 5 people tomorrow, 5 or 10 random people at your organization, and just ask them the simple question, why should anyone give their money to us? You may be surprised at some of the answers, but hopefully you're going to get some really great specific ones, because your donors need really great specific reasons to give. And this kind of goes along with what we were talking about just now about the fundraising letter. I think everyone should sit down and read all of the fundraising communication, large and small, from the year-end appeals to the tweets and the texts that you've sent to your donors in the past 12 months, and then ask yourself these questions. Number one, were we honest? I mean, really, the truth is bad enough. There's never a reason to have to embellish a story or dramatize a story. The truth is dramatic. You know, animals need rescued. Kids are going hungry. diseases need cured, or someone's rights are being infringed upon, and laws need changed, and museums need funded. I mean, the list really goes on. And we don't need to add a lot of superlatives to make our mission sound compelling. That story does it for us. Number two question you should ask is, were we direct? Did we beat around the bush, or did we plainly state what we needed and why? If you need more money and you want someone to move up to, let's say, your mid-level program, don't spend a lot of time telling them how great they are. They already know that. Tell them very specifically and very directly why you need the money. Will their bigger gift help launch a new program? Or if combined with that of 100 other people, will it help more people, places, or things? Number three, were we genuine? Did the person who signed our letter sound sincere? And when you go back and read those letters, did you feel a connection? And do you think that your donors did? And number four, did we make it easy? Is it easy to understand why we need help? Is it easy to understand how the donor could make a difference? How will my $50 or $250 or $2,000 help solve the big problem at hand? Break it down for each level. If you want someone to give $50, tell them what that would do. If you want someone to give $2,000, give them a reason for why that $2,000 is important and why they should do it. Is it easy to grasp what you want the reader to do? If you want someone to give, ask them, and ask them more than once. And, as we were talking about earlier, that's the purpose of something that you get in the mail. If you want them to give more, tell them how much, and always remind them why it's so important. And then number five, if someone gave you more money, and they did take that upgrade ask, did you take them out of the communication stream that got them to that gift and suddenly place them in a new one that no longer makes them feel the same way or makes them act the same way that they did when they gave the gift that got them to that level in the first place?
That's great.
Ellen. That was awesome. One of the things that you said right at the beginning, and I don't want people to lose that because I've seen the power of it just last month, I was facilitating a retreat, and the organization had put together profiles of donors, major givers, regular small annual givers, and they created an entire binder, multi-inch binder, with all of the communications, printing out the emails, the exact samples of all the direct mail, the invitations to events, because their leadership was saying we're doing too much direct mail, or over-communicating with donors. So they went through and looked at the different scenarios. How many touches did they get? And some of them were getting 34 or 42 touches. But when you started looking at it, it made sense because they were giving. So they were getting the thank you notes and they were getting other information. And they all felt so relieved that their voice was pretty much consistent throughout, and that they weren't necessarily over communicating to donors. But they wouldn't have known that if they hadn't printed it all out and compiled it like you suggested.
Yep.
Those are great points. So guys, I know we've talked a lot about creative. We've talked about copywriting, best practices there. We've talked about strategies. I want to actually pitch a little bit to the other side of the formula and the other side of the puzzle, which is really around the metrics and ROI. Kristen, I know you've got some thoughts on this, but before you give us your thoughts on sort of metrics and analytics, we've got a couple of people who want you to say again the name of the Pocket Guide and who wrote it.
The Pocket Guide, and I'm not sure that I have it in front of me because I'm sure I probably lent it to someone. It is written by Jeff Brooks, and it's about a year old or so. You can get it on Amazon. I think it's about $10. And it's a great thing just to keep around. Share it with your board members. Share it with your executive director. Highlight it for them. Dog ear pages. It'll become your best friend.
It's called The Fundraiser's Guide to Irresistible Communications.
There you have it.
Field-tested strategies for raising more money. That's the
nice. Okay, we had quite a few questions for that, so I wanted to throw that in. And by the way, Molly and Christina, I've got your questions. We're going to get to those, so don't think that I'm missing you there. Kristen, talk to us about analytics. Talk to us about sort of the concept of the numbers side of this.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to take actually a little bit of a different perspective on this. And Ellen, you teed this conversation up great, because a lot of folks are looking now that the recession is hopefully drawing to a close. They're looking at these mid-level programs that in some cases they created very quickly during a recession, or that because of the pressures of the recession, they changed really significantly in terms of the frequency of the communication, the urgency of the communication, and switching from that, bringing that donor in and connecting with them to almost making them into the human ATMs that we're all afraid of creating with our mid-level donors. So one of the things that I wanted to share with the group today to dovetail and really to take us from the art, the messaging, over to the science, is to look at how we measure ROI for these high-value segments. You know, the changes that have happened in the last couple of years have created, in many cases, a less scientific approach for a lot of organizations in how often they speak to their mid-level donors, what the content of those conversations really includes. And so I think it's really time for a lot of organizations to set a new benchmark, specifically for their mid-level groups, but this really applies for everyone. So we have, for many of the organizations that we work with where they have a robust mid-level program or one that's in rapid transition, we've created seven super KPIs that we apply to the mid-level audience. And they're a little bit different than the campaign-based metrics. They are the scientific side of creating that portfolio with every, or that binder, with every single email, mail piece, telephone script. This is the numbers-driven snapshot of what your program looks like. So there are, as I mentioned, seven of them. They roll the performance and cost data together, so it takes a little bit of compilation, but it is a nice way to look at your investment in these donors and what their return is, especially if you don't have a complex and potentially expensive long-term value tool. So I'm going to go through these seven really quickly. Everybody get their pencils ready. The first four are all performance-related, and remember, we're not talking about campaign performance, we're talking about annual performance in the program. The first is response rate, not your normal response rate, but taking all of your campaign pieces and dividing them by all of your gifts, or rather the inverse of that. So you're looking at the average response rate across the year. The second, and this is a great yardstick, is the gifts per year per donor. It's really the number of members that are in your segment, or the number of donors that are in the segment, because you also want to include in that number donors who got treatment throughout the year but may not have made a gift. Perhaps they've lapsed completely to the organization. So, again, that one is gifts per year per segment member. The next one is annual average gift. That's a great thermometer, and looking back in the last 3 to 5 years and seeing how that may have changed is a wonderful benchmark for you to establish your future growth opportunities. This is particularly important for programs that had changes in the frequency of their campaigns. We recently started working on one campaign in 2009. I'm sorry, in one program. In 2009, they had campaigns, 8 campaigns a year to their mid-level donors. Last year, they mailed 14. And while they spent a lot more, the net delivered to the organization actually went down slightly. The fourth is annual value per audience member. So you're going to look at, if for all those folks that were in your program, what was their contribution throughout the year? So those are your four performance metrics. The next three are really related to investment and return to your organization. The first is your annual cost per audience member. So you're going to add up all of the pieces that you mail during the year, all the emails that you execute, all of your annual reports and cultivation pieces and things that may not necessarily be revenue generating, and look at what the cost is per member or audience member. The next is obviously related to that, and that would be your annual net per audience member. And then lastly, and this is very important as we're all looking so closely at our fundraising efficiency numbers and how those get reported to our donors, is looking at your annual ROI, or the transition or the flip side of the ROI, which is your annual cost per dollar raised for the donors who are in this program. Those seven metrics put together are absolutely a complete snapshot of your mid-level or, frankly, any high-value donor program. And if you benchmark that now and potentially even look back for the last 3 years, you'll know how you can change things in the future and where you need to steer your ship to have the real growth opportunities that you're looking for.
That's great, Kristen. In fact, I'm going to ask you actually, since you've gone through sort of a deep dive on some metrics that people should be looking at. We've got a person who's a part of the call right now. Her name is Christina, and she basically says, you know, it's the question we've all been looking at. Some NGOs are quitting to use direct mail, due to cost. What do you think about this? I'd love to know your perspective on just sort of even the metrics that you just used to help somebody who's sort of in a situation of wondering whether direct mail is still the right channel for them.
Well, the metrics that I talked about are specifically helpful for mid-level. And your justification for talking to those folks shouldn't be a very difficult argument. But it's certainly something that you can look at for your overall program as well. And I think, you know, we're all faced with that. Ellen, I think, started out talking about what happens when you have to fight the acquisition battle again in order to keep your program going. Balancing the investment that you are going to make in acquisition with the growth, the continued opportunity, and hopefully the filling of the pipeline for your major and ultimate gifts is really the way to illustrate a complete picture of the role of direct response. I spent 7 years with the American Cancer Society, and well over 90% of the planned gifts that came into that organization came from people whose first or early gifts to the organization were through direct mail. So the long-term payoff of the origin source of direct mail is really the necessary component to put into having a complete picture of what the value of mail is to any organization.
Does that
help,
totally
Christina,
agree.
I hope?
Yeah.
Great.
So one quick thing I want to tell all of our panelists is there. We've got a couple of more topics we want to get to. One quick thing. We've got a couple of people that have talked about the fact that their campaigns are tracking lower, and that they're wondering, you know, what our panel might think about maximizing year-end campaigns. So excuse me, as we go through the next couple of topics around professional development and how to look at different kinds of analysis, et cetera, keep that in mind, and anybody else who has some ideas, that would be great. Speaking of other best practices, and I know we've sort of come full circle, we've talked about metrics, we've talked about strategy, creative, copywriting, et cetera, there is a component of this that's about all of us, staff, you know, people that are working hard every day, either in an agency or at a nonprofit. You know, who has some thoughts on that? Mark, what's your thought on sort of keeping our staff where they need to be to be able to move the marble forward?
All right. So if I take the next 8 minutes, Joe doesn't get a chance to speak. Is that right?
I'll try to
do my gust of 600 words a minute instead of my slower speeds. One of the things I think I'm a Franklin Covey coach, and I really love the seven habits of highly effective people. The seventh habit being sharpening the saw. Stephen Covey talks about the fable of the two people, two lumberjacks trying to cut trees. They're in a contest. One of them kept stopping and sharpening his saw. The other one just sawed all day, and it got duller and duller, and he had to work harder and harder, and he became less effective. And I think all too often in nonprofits, we as staff members and boards and leaders we just have to produce, 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 and we never take the time to actually do the metric testing to see if the production is worth it. We're just taking the time to, like a staff retreat, professional development, going to a conference, attending a virtual conference like this. And I think that's the stuff that keeps us sharp. It helps cross-pollinate ideas. Even if you're hearing something that doesn't actually – you don't know what a KPI is, you might think about something – you know, it's key performance indicator if you didn't know. But you might think that some of those things are things that you can use in your job and because your mind wanders. And it's giving yourself space to do that. So whether it's a board retreat or a staff retreat, it could be just as simple as most of us have blogs. There's a ton of great blogs. Jeff Brooks has them, Tom Hearn. A lot of us have great blogs and writing. There's even Twitter lists that you could follow. But I'm a real fan of prioritizing professional development and making it easy. There's all sorts of ways you can get that, and you don't have to. Movie Mondays is free. Every Monday you get a little video. that go into your inbox, and you can have your staff come around and somebody's telling a story of some aspect of fundraising. That's Movie Mondays. I think it's .com. So you could just – there's all sorts of – yeah, I'm sorry. I thought I would be – I'm just babbling. I get so excited about development.
Well,
the reason – okay, because there was a pause there. The reason this is so important and the reason for me that this is critical is that study that was done at the beginning of last year called Underdeveloped, where something like half of all CEOs wanted to fire their fundraisers and about the same amount of fundraisers wanted to quit their job. I think part of it's just because they're not getting coaching. People don't want to do the fundraising in nonprofits, so they throw somebody into the position. They don't know what that person's supposed to do. And then when that person does it, they can't manage that person like everybody like they manage everyone else. You know, everybody else, if their butt's in the seat, you know that they're probably doing their job. But the fundraiser, if their butt's not in the seat, they're being more effective. But it looks like they're just always going out for coffee. So I think part of the reason you need the professional development is to help continue to check in about how are we measuring job performance within fundraising. And that's where coaching and having other relationships with people outside of the system can be really great too.
Fantastic. I think it's great information. I think we sort of forget about that piece of the puzzle in it, and it's super important. I'm going to do a little shifting around here since we do have the question about the campaigns that are maybe tracking lower and if there are any opportunities, you know, that this panel might have towards the end. I'd love to, if it's okay with you, Kristen, I'm going to pitch to Joe right quick. I know Joe's got some ideas because of the organization she's working with now. She's got some ideas, and I thought maybe you might have some ideas to help a couple of our folks that need some great thinking for the rest of the year.
I'm sure you're just moving me up because I was fussy. I'm kidding, and I actually have a million sticky notes written that have changed completely the way that I was going to present this. So bear with me. I will try to get through them very quickly, and we may go to three or four great points. So as some of you may or may not know, I spent a lot of years with a 900 plus million dollar organization. And I'm in my same sector in animal welfare. I'm currently the executive director of an organization called Save the Chimps, and our full operating budget is $5 million. We are small. We are tiny, but we are mighty. For some of you that are on the line that are sitting in nonprofits right now, and you know if your monthly operating budget doesn't get met, all the metrics in the world, all the fundraising advice that you get in the world isn't going to change the fact that whatever it is you serve isn't going to get served that month. And that is a very humbling and a very fearful place to be if you don't have the right tools. So I find myself in my first few months here kind of thinking, what are the handful of things that I can feel really, really well that the big guys do? And the big guys have done it because we have a little more opportunity to invest and maybe make mistakes and learn and keep going. Mistakes in a small to mid-sized nonprofit can be a death knell, but you still have to try. You can't not. So what I've kind of come up with and how I'm approaching revamping everything from our website here to our mass marketing fundraising with the team currently here is, number one, think big. Think very big and work backwards. Look at the organizations either within your sector or within sectors that you admire, the way that they market, communicate. Look superficially. It doesn't really matter at first. Call someone within that organization and ask to be a mentor. So, Mark, I wrote down exactly what you were talking about from continuing education. This is the perfect place for one of those people who doesn't even know that they need a KPI to be. And maybe they're so small, they don't have it yet, and that's okay. So start big and work backward. Look at a big org chart of an organization you'd like to be a part of or how you'd like to see yourself grow over the years and pull back to the areas that have the most opportunity for you. If you are uniquely situated for major gifts or you have a fantastic story that's web and very visual, maybe you start that before you start your mass marketing fundraising opportunities. Convincing the board, as Ellen talked about, more investment and acquisition, and Kristen mentioned it as well, it can be challenging. So in a very small organization, look at what the best practices are and figure the best bang for your buck, which leads to, you know, steal very well. We are not the first fundraisers to sit around and talk about best practices in fundraising. I hate to tell everyone that, but we're not. There are a lot of people out there that do this a lot. Just keep looking. You don't have to sit around with a piece of notebook paper trying to figure out where the next big dollars in cash are coming from. Find your local AFP chapter. Log on to free chat. Look for people in the industry you respect and send them notes and ask them questions. Steal very, very well. Back to Dane's early point, if you haven't yet built a monthly giving program, I always, for me personally, when people talk about I want to build a program of monthly giving within my program, I think, no, it's just a business rule. Just set your business rules. You're going to have monthly donors. You decide if they're going to be your first ask, your only ask, or your primary ask. But when you're small and flexible, that's a great way to drive net income, and you can do it cheaply online. And then I'm going to also, one of my mother's favorite sayings that I absolutely think applies to small nonprofits, just because you can doesn't mean you should. So the next time a donor or a vendor, or not even a vendor, because hopefully the vendor partners you have at the table will see this differently, but the next time someone comes to you enthusiastically to talk about the juice stands that they can have in all 50 states and you're going to make a fortune, take a minute to say no. Or look around at what other nonprofits are doing, and the ones that have highly successful, strong marketing programs, are they doing juice stands around the country? If they are, go for it. But take a minute to evaluate the opportunities that are handed to you and see where that fits within an industry that's already got a lot of best practices. And then my last bit of advice, don't get too caught up in what your case for engagement is. The number of times I've heard, well, gosh, it's easy because there are children involved, or boy, if I just had a puppy for the envelope. The truth of the matter is, if you believe 100% in what you're doing, no matter the size of your nonprofit, you push through until you find the right message for your case for engagement, whether it's online, major gifts, or direct mail. And then, when you have a little bit of basis for success and can start rolling in best practices, or maybe you're right at the precipice and you've got 25,000 names on your donor base and you need to start thinking about the analytics that Kristen was talking about, all of those things apply, but if you have to start somewhere, start by looking around at what people that you admire do and ask how they do it, and I'm done.
Joe, I think that was great information. Guys, I know there are a couple other questions that that came in through the Q&A. I promise you we will find a way to get back to you. We'll get some information out, and I'm going to hand this back over to Margaret to wrap us up, and I just want to say thanks so much to a great panel. It's a pleasure.
Great. Thank you so much, everybody. We could have gone on for quite a while, but we will get this information into the either into the newsletter or the magazine, and we'll get the other questions answered, so keep an eye out for that. On behalf of Fundraising Success Magazine, I want to thank everyone again for attending this session, for participating. I think it was a great time. In order to download the tracking documentation, you'll need to claim the CFRE points you're entitled to for participating. Please click on the resource widget below. It's marked with a file folder. And remember, if you missed anything or you just have to come back to it, the entire virtual show will be archived and the on-demand environment will be available for 3 months starting on Monday. Thanks again, everybody.